Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. It's the 20th now of April 2025. Yesterday was my daughter's birthday in New Zealand. I think she had a lovely time, which is good to know. But with the time difference, it's always a bit tricky. Just having to look, it's about 6:30 in the morning. I actually came down again. I woke up at about 3:15 again. Seems to be a bit of a thing. Arcadian or something like that. Arcadian rhythm. I can't remember. Somebody's mentioned it once and it's stuck in my head as something like an Arcadian rhythm. But I'm not sure whether that's the right word or not. And that if you wake up, I think I mentioned this the other day, if you wake up, the best thing to do is to come downstairs or to get out of that room. Yes, I did. That's right. I remember talking about it. Anyway, so I did again come down and sat down on the sofa here, the second-hand sofa, the knackered old second-hand sofa that I have, and meditated for a... not as long as the previous ones, to be honest, because I was a bit tired, actually. But it was enough. About 20 minutes, 25 minutes, something like that. And I'd had a glass of milk. The cat came down, but I didn't want to let the cat out in the middle of the night again. And he wasn't insistent on going out. So he came and just sat on the windowsill. So I thought, oh, well, if he's not insistent, then I'll leave him. And he was fine. I went back to bed and promptly fell asleep. So that's all good. And then woke up at 6:00. It's 6:30 now. I've had a cup of coffee. Plonked myself back downstairs again. And, well, that was that. So, interesting. And the cat, I said, do you want to go out? And he sort of sauntered over to the door and said, yeah, may as well. So there you are. That's all good fun, isn't it? Anyway, I'm downstairs now thinking I've got a number of things to do. It's Easter Sunday. Julia's down at her mum's. And if she's listening, hello, Julia. Missing you greatly, of course. I was invited, but I said, you know, I'm very close to the catching up to the end of where I've got to and then finishing off the book. And I'm not rushing it, but I am concentrating on it, as it were. I spent yesterday doing a fair bit. Haven't been out of the house much, to be clear. We did go down to the, Julia came over in the afternoon before she went to, lunchtime it was, I think, before she went to her mum's. She came over, she brought some beef over. She'd been cooking some beef and some gravy and what have you. So she brought lunch, which was very lovely. So we had that, and then we took a stroll down to the park in the sunshine, as the sun did deem itself out. It was a sort of touch and go with the sun yesterday. It was one minute it was out, the next minute it was in, and it was out. When it was out, it was lovely. It wasn't, who knows what chemtrailed that particular day, I can't remember. We did see a few of them in the sky, so, you know. Anyway, we sat in the park, we had a bit of chocolate. I don't indulge too much in chocolate these days because of the various nasties they put in it all. But it's very hard to get a decent piece of chocolate these days without some version of something in it that isn't healthy. And anyway, so we had a little bit of chocolate. We came back, really. And then poor old Julie had to... well, I say poor old Julia, she had to go, which she did. And, excuse me. So that was that, really. And then I carried on working. And then I got the fire going and everything. Oh, was it the night before? It was very slow. Oh, yeah, no. It's a funny old business. What is, you say? What is it? Get your head clear, Mr. Phobes. It's funny old business, cooking in my house. You see, I'm very much now of the mode of we don't rush anything. You can't rush anything when you've got a wood-burning stove, and that's the only way you cook off it. So you've got to light the, you know, light the thing. You've got to make get some kindling, knock up some kindling from some old timber, and then get the logs, get the thing going. And now I had some sausages to I had sausages the day before yesterday, which I took out the freezer, six of them. And I had three that day, and then I had three, which I'd already cooked, but just needed warming up for tonight, because I knew I'd be, last night rather, because I knew I'd be on my own. So, a bit sniffly this morning. So, so I thought, oh, well, I'll just cook some veg with that, some potatoes, carrots, and some cabbage. You know, some nice cabbage. So, and then I was waiting also for a video to drop, as they say, to drop, to be released on YouTube for somebody I watch quite a lot. And I was waiting for that, and I thought, well, and so anyway, everything was slowly coming together, and then the video came out, and I sat and watched that. And by which time, it was getting on. I think I was quite tired because of all this getting up in the night business. And I had been fine, had loads of energy throughout the day, and was getting on and done really well. And I just thought, you know, there was this, in the back of my mind, there was this idea, well, you could do a little bit more on the book, couldn't you, in the evening, as it's quiet, take advantage. But actually, by the time I'd got all that sorted out, I did have a beer. I very rarely do Julia and I drink, but occasionally we'll have a glass of port. And I was given this case of beer, must have been a year ago now, and every now and again I'll take one out. Anyway, I was in the mood, it was mellow, and I thought I'd just have this beer with my dinner, which I did. And of course, that's it really, isn't it? One beer. I'm not a great drinker at all, but one beer was enough. Just to sort of relax me. Can't remember what I did after. I cleaned up, washed up, had a bath, had a conversation with Julia on the phone, and headed off to bed. I did do some reading yesterday as well. That's right. I did do some reading with God is an Englishman. R.F. Delderfield. Do like his work. I do like his work. I'm in the market. I mean, I've got a few more of his books to read, but I am in the market for like-minded authors. Or like-minded? Like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's kind of like-minded. Likewise. Or similar. Anyway, similar type of authors. I like that kind of stuff. And if anybody's got any recommendations out there and says, oh, I've read this great book. You see, I don't necessarily need, doesn't necessarily need to be high adventure. I used to read, I'll tell you who I used to read. This could be quite good for a pipe smoking video, although I've recorded it now, but in the future. I used to read, Hammond Innes, Desmond Bagley. These were all like of the 70s, weren't they? The one who did The Devil Rides Out, Dennis Wheatley, used to read all those authors, all that adventure stuff, you know. The one that I used to love, I think I mentioned it on here before, was Sapper, good old Bulldog Drummond, you know. I'm just trying to think who else there was at that time. But anyway, these were the sort of the ones, Ice Station Zebra, and who was that one who did the play, who was always about aeroplanes? In fact, we read one of his at school. And then Jeffrey, who did Rogue Mail, and they made a film of it, which was relatively good, actually. Rogue Mail. I read it when I was at school as part of the syllabus. We had an American English teacher at my secondary education school. I can't remember his name now, but I can picture him, a tall, thin chap. And we read Rogue Mail, it was called, by Jeffrey Household. I think that was his name. It was something like that. It wasn't White House, but it was. I think it was Jeffrey Household. I don't know if he ever wrote any other books. Anyway, I'd forgotten about it. And at the time, because it was at school and we read it in bits at school and what have you, and we were reading it out loud and, you know, studying it. I don't know whether we had to write up something. I think we just read it in class as a book, as my memory serves. I couldn't really remember at the time what it was about. There were bits of it which I thought was quite good. It was about, really, a man who went on a hunting trip somewhere in Eastern Europe. And he got, by chance, I think it was, he got close to somebody very important. And I think in the film, they made out it was Hitler, I think. I can't remember. It was something like that, or some Russian. I thought it was a Russian somebody or other in the book. But anyway, he gets close to, I think it's by chance, on his hunting trip. And so just as a bit of fun, he stalks the guy one afternoon when it's happening, and he raises his gun to pretend to see if he could just pop him off, you know, through these sights, with no intention of doing so. But he is spotted, and he bolts. He comes back to England, and he is being hunted, you see, as the man who would be assassin. And it was like, no, I'm just on a hunting trip. But no one believes him, of course. And so in the end, he takes to the ground. He goes, I think he's in Devon or Dorset, and he bolts into, he finds a hole, and he builds this hole, and he lives in this hole in the ground from where he can observe life that's going around. But eventually he is found in this hole, and there's a whole business about this chap trying to get him out of the hole. They starve him, or they put smoke down there. They do all sorts of things to get him out of this hole. I mean, he lives in this. It's not just a hole. You know, he's boarded it up and made it into a house over a few months. And anyway, it's really good. It's great writing in terms of somebody stuck in a hole. You know, I quite like it if somebody can write when the action is very minimum and you're gripped. You know, it's easy to write in which so much stuff keeps happening. You know, and they ran through this door and up the stairs and over here and on a train, on an aeroplane and down this plate. Because you could carry on doing that for ages, couldn't you? And just fill up pages and be breathless. But nothing really has happened other than people have just been running from here, pillar to post. But when you've got to try and keep people's interest when not much is happening, that's the skill. And I don't know that I could do that, because my splidge books is loads goes on. Anyway, Rogue Mail. Anyway, so what I was going to say is, about 2 or 3 years ago, I don't know what reminded me. I went online, found the book, bought it. So we are talking like, what are we talking? 40 years later, I read the book, loved it, put it on the show. Then I saw the film, watched the film. Alistair Sim was in the film as the character's father, a very small part. And he must have been getting on, because I think the film was made in the 70s. So probably when I was at school reading the book, the film had been made and nobody knew. Anyway, so there we are. Rogue Mail. How about that? So if anyone's got any good books, in the vein of, you see, R.F. Delderfield does he does these sort of sagas, which is great. And I tell you who else I was reading. I'm just pulling off. He wrote very beautifully. H.E. Bates. How are we doing on the time? I'm just trying to get into a position where I can put the microphone down for a second. Hold on. I'm lolling about. It's Easter Sunday, by the way. Happy Easter, everybody. Where can I put you? This is being unprepared. H.E. Bates. Master Bates, as they say in the trade. I've got this compendium here, selection of novels and short stories. I don't know if I've read them all, actually. Something's just fallen off the shelf. Luckily, not you. H.E. Bates' famous novels. I can't remember now. What was he famous for? He's famous for many novels. Oh, The Darling Buds of May. That's right. That's what it was. The Darling Buds of May. The Purple Plan. I think I've read. What was the other one? The Purple Plane. Yes. I mean, some writers just... they're just, you know, can write so beautifully. The Simple Life. Here we are, look. We all want a simple life, don't we? Let me just read a little bit from The Simple Life to end today's ramblings. If I can find the beginning of it. The Simple Life. Here we go. On Easter Sunday. Winter began in August. Or so it always seemed to her. Always from the very first sight of it, she hated the cottage. She loathed the plain square red brick box, its blue slate roof, the squalid confusion of currant bushes, black hen coops, falling fences and apple trees in sprawling decay that passed for a garden, the muddy pond at the foot of it, and the three withered willows sticking nakedly up from the water like grey arms caught and fossilised in the act of drowning. Above it all, she hated the quiet, clenching cold. That's just the first paragraph. Isn't that amazing? That grips you, doesn't it? If you're not gripped by the first paragraph, and certainly the first page... you know, if you're not gripped by the first paragraph, you don't read the first page. If you don't read the first page, you don't read the first chapter. If you don't read the first chapter, you know what I'm saying. Must get down to the cottage. Must go down for the weekend. For 2 years and more, she had listened to the same repeated cry. God, I don't know what I would do without the cottage. She hated, too, the long Friday evening drive out of town to what her husband fondly called the simple life. As the big motorway gave way to the narrower country lanes and then to the flat, almost treeless spaces of marshland and finally to the grated track across fields crossed by endless dikes feathered by brown reeds in which watching herons stood poised under a great width of empty sky, apparently fossilised too, she found herself increasingly imprisoned in a grey cage of impotent anger. Perhaps above all, she hated the voice of her husband for forever reminding her of the joys that awaited them on arrival at that little place in the country. The simplicity of it all. That's what gets me. That's the thing. No television, no telephone, no radio, no rat race. No appointments, just you and the sky and, my God, the air. With certainty, she knew every Friday, as they came to the end of the field track and within sight of the cottage, what this first syllable, first gesture would be. Ah, that air! The fattish frame always seemed to broaden itself still further in the act of respiration. The immense exhaled sigh blew itself from his big, loose mouth like a breath of sea wind. The well-manicured city hands slapped his chest with gusto, not unlike that of an ape revealing in passion for its given square of territory. By God, you can fairly taste the sea in that air. The air. Winter and summer always seemed the same to her, like ice. Always from across the flat grey dikes came the quiet clenching cold, and always, 5 minutes after arriving, she started drinking heavily. After the first reviving juniper lick of gin across her dry mouth, she gave a great expanding sigh of her own. Often she didn't bother to take off her fur coat, but merely wandered about in it, unpacking, powdering her face, smoking, staring out of the windows at the desolation of marshland, her drink never far away. Her first immediate pleasure, after the stimulating lick of gin, was to draw the curtains and put on all the lights. The privacy of the world thus secured, together with the gin, made her for a time quite affable. Even good-humoured. The outer desolation she had hated was first shut out, then forgotten, and finally replaced by a warm, rosy glow in which she felt at last, and for another hour or two, civilised. By 10 o'clock or so, the last trace of affability, even civility, was dead. She began to be loose-lipped, strident, oily-eyed, hostile, bitter. I tell you once and for all, Mr. Barty Bartholomew, this is the last time I come down to this rotten, stinking hole, this bloody fly-trap. I've said it before and I won't say it again. I don't live in privies. I am not used to buckets in the yard. You keep your lousy, simple life. Strangle it for me, will you? With love, from Stella. Once, in a fit of gibbering fury, she let a burning cigarette fall from her lips and lodge in the collar of her fur coat, where it actually set afire, which she allowed to burn for a full minute before he realised the danger and started swiping it with both hands. Oh, for Jesus' sake, let it burn! It might just as well burn, I tell you. Let me bloody well burn. Well, I don't know how big is this story. This is lovely, isn't it? I'm hooked already. Why does she hate the place? It's the sort of there's only a few pages to that. Not too many for here. I'm just going to put a thing on it. I might finish that. The Simple Life by H.E. Bates. Isn't it beautiful writing? I love beautiful writing. It draws you in. I love the descriptions, like, you know, the reeds. Standing upright, however he described it, like an arm frozen, fossilized, as if in someone drowning. I love those sort of similes. I wish I could write like that. I do try, but not hard enough, I don't think. And one needs to be reminded, you know, one needs to be reminded. So if you've got any good authors that you think would be nice, that sort of thing, I like that. I like that period as well, in the sort of early 20th century. That's not to say I don't like other periods. I'm not keen so much on the modern period. You know, mobile phones, detective stuff. I mean, they're all right. I'm not really keen on that. I'd much rather have a more classic period of, well, what would be now 50 to 100 years ago, I suppose. God is an Englishman is set in... around 18, well, it's at the beginning of the railways, isn't it? So it's about 1850, 1860, something like that. Maybe a bit, just a little bit later. I don't mind historical novels. Not too much love. I don't really want to read stuff where they try too hard. I've noticed some authors these days try too hard and are too descriptive. There was a sort of, you know, sense that you can still be a bit pedestrian, but be, and by that I mean, you could. When I was learning to write my first book, sorry, I'll let you go in a second. And I think I've spoken about this before. I was reading some workshops and things, and there were people who were saying, you must never, 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 never write, it was this, that, and the other. You must never use the word was or being. You know, they were being racist. They were being naughty, whatever it might be, you know, being. They were saying you can be more cleverer and describe it a different way. Let's say it was raining. You could, you know, it was raining. It was always raining in the land of Gud. It rained harder than anyone ever imagined is a more descriptive way. And I get it. I understand that. But it made me very worried when I was writing that any time I wrote, just for the sake of getting to the point that I wanted to make, you know, it was a hot day and such and such and such and such. And it was like, no, no, you can't say it was a hot day. You have to say the heat wafted down through the atmosphere, causing sweaty necks to expire, you know, all this sort of stuff. And you go, yeah, but all I wanted to say was it was a hot day. And Mary and John decided to go to the pond. You know, I want to get it over very quickly. I didn't want to spend too long explaining how hot it was, why it was hot, where the heat was coming from. It wasn't relevant to the story. But these writing classes or videos that I was watching, a lot of them were American, I have to say. Anyway, I noticed in some books that I read that were of today's sort of thing, these modern writers would write like that. And it was like, have you got any wases in your thing at all? No. And then I was reading great classic writers like H.E. Bates, R.F. Delfield, other authors, you know, and they're using it all the time. It was over by the pond that Mrs. Jenkins was sitting, and she noticed that. And so it goes on. And I thought, relief, because some authors try too hard to write. And I don't think you should. I mean, it is beautiful when the writing is descriptive, but descriptive where it needs to be. And learning that is the hard bit, really. And now, of course, as I've been writing my books, and I get to a... It was a dull day. Can I get away with that? Is it important? Is it important to say how dull? If I'm writing, say, a sequence in which I want to describe how dull it was, then I wouldn't say it was a dull day, would I? I would say the overcast sky brought a feeling of dejection on the characters, whatever, you know, all that sort of thing. You know what I'm saying. Anyway. I'll leave it there. Thank you for listening. Take care. Have a wonderful day. Toodle-pip.